Welcome, everyone, to this episode of O365A. On this episode, we have a couple of special guests with us, Martina Grohm and Tony Pohl, who are from At Work and going to discuss with us some of their products that they have around security and compliance, delegation as well. And so maybe, Martina and Tony, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and, what At Work is about.
Okay. So, hello, everybody. My name is Martina Grohm. I'm an MVP for Azure and Microsoft 365, and I started working with cloud services pretty long time ago. It was back in 2008 when Microsoft announced, we will move away from product packages, we will move into a service-oriented environment, and we will move to the cloud. And here we are. And together with my partner, Tony Pohl, we founded At Work a long time ago. It was in 1999, where we started the business. And we are At Work. We are located in Vienna, Austria. And currently, we are focusing on everything around cloud technologies, and half of the company is more developer oriented and the other half is more business consulting and enterprise consulting oriented. So Tony.
Hello from the second half of At Work. So this is Tony Pohl. It's great to be here together with my colleague Martina. As Martina said, we in our company, we are specialized in consulting on the one hand and developing solutions for Microsoft 365 and Azure on the other side. So my background is more from the developer side, and I mostly architecturing solutions that run on Microsoft Azure for our customers. And many of these solutions are going into the direction of security and governance and compliance, and of course, business processes. So today we have tools like the Power Platform that also plays an important role today. But we also, as developers, we try to find solutions for our customers, like, for example, business workflows, Azure Functions, and so on. And out of that idea that we try to find solutions for our customers and partners came more or less the first product we created something about 10 years ago that is called Delegate 365, which is a solution that allows to split a single Office 365 tenant or Microsoft 365 tenant, as it's called today, into smaller manageable pieces. And a second product, we call it the small brother of Delegate 365, is our governance toolkit, because we found that many of our customers who are enterprise customers are struggling with doing governance in their Microsoft 365 tenant. And there's a nice story about that, because Martina had a session at Microsoft Ignite, it was in 2018, about the new unified groups, or now the Microsoft 365 groups. And Martina had a session together with Christoph Feisinger, and they more or less introduced what is the new groups concept. And at the end, Martina showed more or less how can you provision a new group with, I think it was PowerShell at that time. And then in the end, she also showed a Power BI dashboard that gives an overview over the Microsoft 365 tenant. And in that moment, I was part of the audience then. We saw that all the hands arise and everybody took a camera snapshot out of the Power BI, because that was that useful and impressive for more or less the whole audience. There was something like 501,000 people in that room who said, hey, wow, we can do something with that data. We can visualize the data, and then we can start doing business processes with that data. And out of that more or less session, we saw that there's a big demand for having a solution doing governance in Microsoft 365. And out of that more or less session, we developed our toolkit, which I'm going to show you today.
Before we jump into the governance, I have a question around the Delegate 365. How do you differ from like the admin unit stuff that's coming in through Azure AD and the different workloads supporting that? Like, how does that kind of stack up against your solution, or how do you kind of split a tenant from an administrative point of view?
So what we did with Delegate, it was Delegate was developed 10 years ago, and it came out of the solution that one of the recommendations from Microsoft was to big customers always go with a single tenant scenario because it brings so much more benefits for collaboration, for administration, and things like that. And we have a couple of very big customers using Delegate 365 because the idea behind that is that they have smaller entities who probably do not know administrative units, PowerShell, graph commandlets, and anything you can do through scripting and Airbark, and just want a simple solution where they can manage their licenses, their entities, and do things around that. So it's more or less, it's a very comfortable administration interface for users who are probably not full-day IT pro administrators for a solution. And the other fun part around Delegate was that many of our customers are using that for automation. So for instance, to put them into groups, to do the license management and things like that. And they can work with workbooks in Delegate, which are predefined. And they have a lot of reports, 100, and I think we have currently around 120 reports available in Delegate. That means if you are a customer who needs auditing, reporting, and things like that, it's a good solution for them. And the price point is also interesting for many customers in a larger size range.
Eventually, from my side, what I want to add here that we started developing the Delegate 365 solution at a time where there were no administrative units available. And the interesting part, we are MVPs and since more than 10 years, Martina and I, so we contacted Microsoft, the Azure AD product group at that time and said, hey, we are planning to do this solution because there's no ready-to-use solution for our customers. Is Microsoft planning something to do in this direction? And at that time, we were in contact with a guy from
with
the product
some group. Persons from Azure Active Directory, yes.
Yeah, and he said, well, we are planning something, but I think you have something like 3 or 4 years time until we are ready to have a solution for that. And then he showed us more or less, I think it was a year later or so, the administrative unit,
administrative unit concept,
where he had East and West Coast and said, okay, now I have PowerShell, I can more or less split the management of the East and the West Coast into these two units or so. And then it took another, I think, 1-2 years that Microsoft more or less made it available. So we started to develop our solution very early. And you know what? Microsoft still isn't there where they want to be. So our solution has the benefit that we try to integrate as much as possible, like things like Intune, for example, or things like Teams provisioning and so on. And with all the capabilities you're used to Microsoft 365, like auditing and so on, PowerShell modules, et cetera.
And also what makes it interesting for us, Delegate brought us a lot of experience in dealing with Microsoft Graph, because we started pretty early with that solution. And it was like, we have always a wish list for the whole Graph team, what we need there. And because we do everything through Graph and we want to avoid PowerShell, because if you're dealing with a lot of users and so on, it scales better on the Graph side.
Yeah, so we try to use APIs as much as possible, of course.
Yes.
But there are still some things, as we all know, that are still missing in Microsoft Graph. So we have to work with multiple APIs and even with PowerShell in some specific scenarios.
Like Exchange.
That's awesome. I'd be curious to know what the spin-up cycle is for most of your customers in terms of like contacting you and then deploying Delegate and actually using it in a meaningful way. Is this like something that's really long term, or is it just a matter of hours or days before they can be using the product?
Well, both of the solutions we are going to describe a little bit later eventually are our software as a service component, so you can use it more or less instantly. The only thing what we need to do on the Delegate 365 side is that we provision a tenant for you or for the customer who can try it out with any Microsoft 365 tenant. And the provisioning is just a matter of some minutes or so, and then the solution is ready to use. So the only thing the global administrator has to do here is to run the setup and say, I allow the delegate application to access my tenant. And this is the binding between the Microsoft 365 tenant on the one side and our solution on the other side. And the same concept applies to our governance toolkit. So we are always using an application that is more or less the accessing the Microsoft 365 tenant. Sure. So if the customer tries it out, he simply can remove the application and this is it, then the binding is gone.
Yeah. And also from our concept, it's always SaaS. So we try to pay not a lot of money to Azure. So to make it a very small solution and to use functionality, which brings a lot of value to the customers, but doesn't cost them a lot of money with ERS solutions, for instance. So it's a SaaS solution. And it runs very efficient, and we also deploy it. So for instance, if a customer from Canada comes there and we say, okay, what data center do you want? So every customer, we can host it worldwide in the data center the customer decides to have it.
And I think this is really one of the benefits the customer has, and we as a small ISV located in small Austria have, that we are able to provide such a functionality with Microsoft Azure. We couldn't do it without that platform.
Yeah. The downside of everything is, I'm sorry, is like we are a good ISV, but we are not marketing people. So it's hard for customers to find us, more or less.
Yeah. Now, I mean, obviously, marketing by word of mouth is the best kind of marketing. So,
yes.
So I just had a follow up around the whole delegate. So, is the management of the users who are able to use the Delegate 365, or how you set up, is that all done in the Delegate 365 side, or is it a portion done inside the enterprise application that gets generated as well?
That's a very good question, Habib. So it's all done on the Delegate 365 side. So you can imagine that Delegate 365 acts like on top of Microsoft 365 and acts like a filter to say, oh, okay, there's a user, Habib, and he's responsible for Montreal, for example. And this means that we filter, okay, all the users and the teams and SharePoint sites and Intune devices and so on that are assigned to the organization unit, as we call it, Montreal in that case. So it's more or less Microsoft 365 doesn't know anything about Delegate 365 or the organization units we have in there. We come from the other direction and say, here you have a tool where you can do the most common tasks in the Microsoft 365 administration.
Gotcha. So you're exposing it from one way into the M365, into your portal. And then the user authenticates there and they only see what they are allowed to see based on the policies that are applied to them.
Yes,
exactly. And with that comes a benefit. For example, if you're responsible for, let's say, Montreal again, we can say, hey, there's another user, a local vendor that supports the subsidiary in Montreal. And this person there has an own Microsoft 365 account from a different tenant. He can use his own single sign-on experience to log into Delegate 365 without the need that that user must be guest in your tenant. So this is also a benefit where many of our customers are using that concept as well to say, okay, I have a local partner and that supports that subsidiary.
Yeah, no, that's very cool, because that way, you know, there's that whole portion of like, I need to expose my tenant or I need to invite them as a guest or et cetera. I don't have to go through all that pain to be able to do that now. So I just need to allow them in through your side. So that's very, very cool. Okay, so that being said, maybe let's show us a little bit of the governance toolkit. And if we have some time, maybe we can take a peek at the Delegate 365 as well. I think we're, the guys and I are very eager.
Also, one last item I want to mention, and that's a good reference to the governance toolkit as well, is Delegate. The intention is that Delegate is still, so the management of Microsoft 365 is still done by experienced people who set up all the security compliance governance in the tenant. And delegate gets on top of that. So you can define policies which are stricter or more regulated, but you can't go below what is already in the tenant. And this is also a benefit. And that means from the governance perspective, that brought us to a more management scenario like the governance toolkit. And as Tony mentioned at Ignite, it was kind of funny because we got a lot of questions around how can we provision Microsoft groups, Office 365 groups? That was the name back then. What can we do? Do we have groups a la carte and so on? How can we provision users? How can we do lifecycle management and so on? And Microsoft asked us, can you please show people what you can do out of the box with graph technologies and so on and with the scripts and so on? And this is why we developed the session for Ignite. And then many of our customers said, yeah, it's nice that we can do that and it's open source, we know, but we actually want to buy the product. So can you please provide us the product for that so that I as a customer doesn't have to deal with any functionalities and so on. And this is why the governance toolkit happened, more or less.
And Tony was just swiping credit cards. Let's go.
Yeah, so I shared my screen. I hope you can see it.
Yes.
Great. So let me tell you a little bit about the governance toolkit, about that solution. And here's the website for it. It's www.governancetoolkit365.com. And we try to more or less focus here on two aspects. The first aspect is that we collect data from a Microsoft 365 tenant, which we need for the second aspect for doing business processes based on that data. So the first thing is to visualize data. And as you can see here in the banner, we visualize data simply by using Power BI because it's very easy to use, very easy to adapt. So if I scroll down here on the side and I click here on some screens here. So for example, we get the groups. We start with that. We also get data from the Power Platform, from Power BI, from how much storage is used in Teams, for example, and so on. Let me show you that in real world. So I have a Power BI already opened so that we can see what data we get here. We get most of the data from Microsoft Graph, which means we can, for example, visualize the groups, the users, Power BI things, et cetera, licenses, et cetera. So this is just a demo here. You can see on the right side here the data we are using. So if I go to the first tab here, identify groups, I get an overview. Well, in this demo tenant, we have something like 46 users and 35 of them are internal users. We have 11 guests. Some of the users are deactivated. There are 4 deleted users in here. And if I scroll down, that data here comes from the users table. You can see it here with the small check mark here on the right side. So which means that customers who are using the governance toolkit can access the data directly and do whatever they want with the data. Here on the right side, we see the same thing with groups. There are 25 groups and we see immediately, okay, there are 4 Microsoft 365 groups, 7 Teams and so on. So if I go further here with the tabs here, we see a little bit more visualization of, in that case, it's a demo tenant. We have only 1 Power App environment in that tenant here, but I can see what Power applications do I have. In that case, I have 8 Power Apps, 3 flows and 13 connections for that. And we come to that a little bit later. We also see it with Power BI because Power BI is part of the Power Platform, but it's, for example, not part of the Center of Excellence Microsoft provides. So it's always important for the administrators to get an idea how many reports are used by whom, for example. In that case, we have only 8 workspaces. I can show you a little bit more data with a different tenant, but that's just the idea here. So if I go further here, it's very nice because this is interactive. Give me a list of all the guests, for example. So if I click on this chart here and I click on guests, I see, in this demo tenant, we have, in that case, these guests here. There's some variation here. There are 11 guests in that tenant here. And out of that, of course, I can combine it with show me all the users with a usage location of US, for example, or of a specific department, et cetera. What's interesting from a governance perspective is when has the user last logged in, because we want to identify inactive users here. So if I click on the last login, we have added categories. If I look at the table here, we can see there are some users that are guests and members, and we see when have they last logged in, and we calculate that data here. So if I look at the users table, you can see there are some columns added here to this table here. -1 means that user never logged in. I created that user, but he never accepted the invitation if it was a guest, for example. Or the last line here, we see there's a user dev15 at Outlook, and we see that user has a last login date in September 2022, which is 316 days ago. Eventually, we should do something with these users. And here we have the categorization to see, okay, give me a list of all the users who never logged in. In that case, 19 users have never logged in, or 17 users who have logged in more than 180 days ago, or however I want to categorize that. So that's just a calculated column in here.
And if you think about lifecycle management, this is what many clients struggle with, that they say, we have a lot of guests in our tenants, but we do not have a clue. Do we still need them? Are they active in the tenant? When can we remove them, and so on? So many governance processes currently say, okay, we have a guest invite process, but we do not have lifecycle management around guests. So some of the policies we can provide through the governance toolkit is that we say, we give you a list of your guests which didn't log in for the last 90 days, and they are safe to be removed out of the tenant. And that could be helpful with kind of a cleanup within Microsoft Entra. I got it right now.
Yeah, Entra. We can use the word now.
Yes.
So yeah,
no, I think that's really great, especially I know that there's a lot of organizations. I work in a lot of government and Canadian government, and there's definitely the onboarding processes, but there's no really offboarding processes when it comes to guest access, right? So there's so many guest accounts that get generated on a daily basis, but then you don't know what it is. And then your Entra database is completely full. Like, you go in there and there's so many more objects in there than there are users or actual guests. So I think this is really beneficial from that sense.
Yeah, the benefit here is that we provide the data, and we can use that data for our business process. That's the second part of the toolkit. So this is just collecting data, visualizing data, so that administrators get an overview at a glance to see, okay, there's something I need to check out, or I need to do something here with the guests. For example, the governance toolkit here gives us a recommendation and says, well, there are some users who should be deleted from our perspective. So for example, you can see some columns here that are saying the user has never logged in. Is it a new user? Because if I invite the user today, we have a grace period of something like, let's say, 30 days. We do not want to automatically delete the user that has just been invited. We say we have a specific time range where the user has time to accept the invitation, and we only count it afterwards, for example. So this column here, to be deleted here, says, should this user be deleted from our rule set? In my case, if I say I just want to filter the users that should be deleted, because our rules say every user that hasn't logged in since 180 days or every user that has never logged in should be deleted automatically. So we have a process for that, to say, we write the user and say, hey, dear user, you haven't logged in since 180 days. If you want to keep your login, then please log in within the next 30 days. Otherwise, your account will be deleted. So that's an automatically cleanup process. Of course, we also have Teams auditing as well, but that's just a very simple process we can use with, we can more or less benefit from the data we have in here. It also goes a little bit further with user last activities. So for example, here the data is obfuscated, but you get the idea. We see users, when did the user last use a specific license? So to identify, are there eventually users who have a specific license that isn't being used by the user? And here we categorize them with year and month. So for example, show me all the users that have last used their licenses in June 2020, for example. In that case, it would be these some users here where the last activity has been a long, long time ago. And if you look at the table that's that has the data behind it, you can see we also have the details like when has the user last accessed SharePoint or OneDrive or Teams or Yammer, for example. So this is just we have it calculated into one column to make it very easy for the administrator to identify, okay, eventually I can remove licenses from a user. If you look a little bit further with the users, of course, we can use maps and all that stuff. Power BI provides it very easily by showing the users by usage location, for example. What's also interesting is licenses show all the users who have eventually no usage location or who have a Microsoft 365 license or who are guests or members, for example. That's just an overview. We'll go more into details with the next versions here. Then let's switch a little bit to groups. Here it's interesting to identify all the groups that have, for example, no members. So in my scenario, we see, hey, there are 7 teams here, so I can filter with teams as well to see, okay, these teams don't have any members. It doesn't make sense to have a team without members, for example. Or my rule set says I need to have at least 2 owners per team or per group. And in my case, I can identify it very easily, show me all the groups that have no owners or have only 1 owner, for example, and I see the result instantly, or show me all the groups where there are no guests, or show me all the groups where there are guests, for example. So in my case, I see IT Team Washington, for example, has 1 external guest. So that's answers questions very quickly. When we go to the group details, that's just a visualization of the group. So show me, for example, that team here with the owners and the members and the guests. That's just a demo for getting that data quickly. Also, Teams activity from a Teams auditing perspective is important. Show me all the teams that haven't been active since, let's say, here we have, for example, 60 days. So in my case, there's 1 team here. Here's obfuscated, but we get the idea as well. To say, okay, this team hasn't been active since 68 days here, which falls into the category 60 to 100 days. So eventually I should contact the team's owner and say, or the team's owners and say, hey, this team hasn't been used. Do you want to archive it? Should we do something here? Or do you just want to keep it?
So it's also.
Yeah. Go ahead, Martin.
No, go ahead.
I was just asking, so yes, I know you mentioned before that this is just more around like the visualization so that the administrators can understand sort of what's happening in the environment. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about what happens next, right? Around the, how do we act or how does the administrator act upon this, right? I know I think you mentioned some business process automation and stuff like that. So maybe if I could get you to maybe pivot a little bit around that side.
Absolutely. Just to finish this here, we also have things here like, for example, Intune managed devices, unmanaged devices, Power Platform usage, Power BI, etc. And all the data comes from storage. So what we do here, and I open Storage Explorer here, the data comes from an Azure Storage account here. And in that case, it's this account here. And here you can see the tables we saw in Power BI, which means we can access that data and do something with that data. So for example, if I look at the group statistics here, and I simply open the table here, and I scroll to the left, we can see, okay, here we have more or less the data. And the data is collected from the group's governance toolkit every night. So usually you have a daily update here on that. We are using Delta expressions as much as possible from Microsoft Graph. And this gives me an overview about how much data is in that in the team here, what's the name of it, dynamic membership and so on. And if I scroll a little bit more to the right, we see, for example, also the many owners, how many members are in the team. And here we have a column that's called owner's email. So which means we can very easily access that data and do something. So we can do flows for that and say, I want to contact the owners depending on the number of owners, for example, and I simply add a flow and write an email to them or an adaptive card in a Microsoft Teams channel and say, please add another owner. So that's the basic idea here. So we have full access to that. And we can also use the storage for creating our own reports, our own data here in here by simply adding more tables. So for example, here we have a report guests table. that is provided by the governance toolkit, where that says, well, there's an owner that has been created for 1077 days ago, for example. That's the username. And we have an automatic process, which is simply a flow. A flow means it can be a Power Automate flow. It can be an Azure Logic app. It can be an automation account with PowerShell. It can be an Azure function. So whatever you want to use in your scenario. And let me show you a sample here, what we do here with the data source, a very simple business process for that. So if I go back to my...
While you're switching, maybe if I could ask how long that the data is stored there for.
That's a very good question. So the data is stored forever. That's also one of the benefits, because Azure Storage doesn't cost a lot here. So whenever you start using the governance toolkit, you have the data in here forever. So for example, if I go to deleted groups or deleted user, we will see the data that has been deleted since the governance toolkit started. We also have things here like timeline.
And also to add to that, it could stay forever. It depends on the customer, what he wants. So if a customer says, I have a deletion policy that everything needs to be deleted after 6 months, we delete it. But very often customers say, okay, we have the requirement to keep the data longer, then we can keep it.
Right.
And this gives us the benefit here. So for example, just to switch back to the Power BI, to do things like a timeline. How was it in my tenant, for example? Was there a cleanup process? We see there's a slight change here in this line here. Or if I go here to the right, I see there was a peak here. Eventually somebody provisioned new teams and deleted them afterwards. Or eventually there was a glitch here, for example. Obviously the tool wasn't running on that day or so. So I see, how is it going over the time with my users and my groups and my licenses, for example. So this is the benefit when you store the data for a longer time frame.
Gotcha.
So when we... Please.
And also from the business process side, what we can do is we can use governance toolkit for things like provision teams. And we can also use the governance toolkit for things like, or business processes like deletion of users, archiving teams, and things like that. And the interesting part around the governance toolkit is that our customers come with new ideas and say, we request you to have Power Platform governance included as well, or maintenance things here. So it's constantly growing more or less from the requirements of customers.
Also with ticket systems like ServiceNow and others, so that we have a connection between the governance toolkit and a flow that, for example, sees that something needs to be modified or added or archived, and then it creates a ticket, for example. So these are typically use cases that can be done very, very easily. So this is just such a sample for... We are using the data, we are doing something with that. That's more or less the business process part. So here you can see in my screen, I switched to the Teams client here in the browser, and I have added a Power App. It's called Provision Team to this channel here, to Project Vienna General. And here we have a very simple to use Power App that says this is a self-service process. First of all, we read who is the user that is currently logged in, and then we look at the department of the user. In that case, the department of the Tony user here is the IT department coming out of Azure Active Directory. Then we say in our organization, we have a prefix that must be used as a prefix for the team you want to provision. So I say that's a team, for example, or a project. Then I give it a name like user group, or let's call it project. Alpha, whatever, and then it generates a name. I cannot change from a user side. So that is IT hyphen team project alpha, and that is the generated email address that must be email safe, of course. And then I want to say I want to provision that team, and then the form simply says, well, you have to add two owners and a business justification for that. So in my case, I simply say, okay, I want to be the owner of that. So that's Tony developer. And the second owner is, let's search for Martina. I think I have her in here as well. And my business justification, I need a team for partner collaboration. And then I simply send this request to the system. And in our case, we decided that we want to have an approval by the manager of the user. We can see in the status here that line here has been added with the request for provisioning that team, IT team project alpha. So if we now go to our resource groups, in that case, we are using Logic Apps for that. So I have a resource group that's called GT365. And here you can see a couple of Logic Apps here, a couple of flows here. And the flow that is responsible for this process here is called Provision Team Approval. And let's have a look what this flow here does. We can see there are some run operations here. This flow usually starts, I think, all 5 or 10 minutes. To save time, I simply run it. I start it right now. So we will see that when I refresh this page, that this is currently running. And what does this flow do? Well, very simple process. It says when an item in the SharePoint list where the Power App creates that data, when that is created, we start.
Tony?
Yeah, there's a question. Tony? Dino, please.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's really cool. This is all canned. Like, so this customer's purchasing the tool, get all of this, or is this something that you've done custom, for example, for customers? So I guess what I'm getting at is, do they have access to all of these tools? And if a customer had a specific requirement, do you offer like services to help build some of this for them, or is it just you're on your own kind of thing? Go use the tool as you wish.
Absolutely. So we provide a couple of these flows automatically when a customer says, I want to try it out. So I can deploy that to my own Azure resource group. We have a process for that to make this automatically possible, to say we have something like 10 or 20 use cases. And they say, I want to use the cleanup guests process. So you can simply deploy it to your Azure resource. That's an ARM template. And the same goes for example, the provision team, invite guests, and so on. So we have some use cases. That's the first part. So the customers get all of it. And the second part is, of course, we support customers. If they say, I have a specific use case, I want to change something, of course, we support them if they want.
And also the governance toolkit comes with a bundle of predefined processes like Teams provisioning, user lifecycle management, guest lifecycle management, all the reporting and so on. But things what we do for customers is, like Tony showed, you showed the Power App. Not every customer wants a Power App. Some want a bot. Another customer wants a SharePoint list. And this is kind of the specifics we work with the customer. And also what we do in the governance toolkit, because it comes with predefined notifications. So the emails which are sent out from the governance toolkit are customized email from the client. So there is the logo of the customer, the predefined text, and things like that. But this comes with the bundle. Yes.
Nice. So in this, that's just a sample scenario. So what we are doing here, we are, for example, looking up the manager of that user. We see the manager of Tony, in that case, is Adele. And we look up for the employee ID or that cost center, whatever. And in my case, I simply overwrite that information, say the manager of Tony is Tony, just to for this demo here, that I can approve this request here. And we see that we currently stand here at the send approval email. We're not sending an adaptive card here. We're simply using the standard approval process. In my case, I got it twice for whatever reason, but you get the idea here that I can say, okay, I'm the manager. I approve this request for this IT team project alpha. I think because I started it manually, I think it ran in the meantime automatically, however I approve it. What should happen now is that we see, okay, the flow continues. And now we simply create that team here by using a key vault where the application secret is stored. And we will see in a minute, we call the provision team API of the governance toolkit to say, please provision the team. And what comes with that, we haven't built it into the Power App, that we're using a Teams template for that. So the Teams template comes automatically with channels and with applications, for example. So let me refresh this here. So we see this did run. And if you look at the payload here, so that's the endpoint we see, this is the payload our API got. We say, okay, we also automatically add some members because the user is part of the IT department. I want to automatically add the other members of the IT department. For example, I add some more information like a business justification, a sponsor. Here we see the team template, who are the owners, et cetera. Is it visibility private or public, for example? We got back a 201. Well, it worked. Here's the idea of that. And then, of course, we update the Power App. So if I look back into the Teams client And I click refresh here, we should see that the IT team project alpha now is green and has been approved. And if you look back at the team here, so we should see here is the IT team project alpha. We can see there's a hidden channel. In my case, because I'm using a team template that's saying I want to have a bulletin board here. And what I also added here that will come up in the next minute or so, a Power App that will be integrated here as a tab. So this comes more or less out of the box because I said when the user is from the IT team, I add these members and I use this template, for example. So that's a very simple flow here. And then, of course, we send out an email to the customer, which is this one with what Martina mentioned before with our own layout and say, okay, this is the status, the request has been processed and it has been approved.
Michael, this is all impressive. I wonder, how do you handle the like chasing of Microsoft changes around Graph and Azure features? Like if you're building some of these things and like a Power App, and all of a sudden there's a new thing that may impact your templates or something like that. How are you keeping up with all of the rate of change?
Be friends with the Graph team.
Exactly, with a lot of effort, Michael. So this is also one of the benefits. Of course, for example, I mentioned it at the beginning. We get a lot of data from the Microsoft Graph. Some functionality isn't available there. So this is why, for example, we also need to access the endpoint for getting Power BI data and getting Power Apps data and getting Intune data. And we take care that when something changes on the Microsoft side, that the governance toolkit is updated. And this is the benefit why it runs as software as a service, because our customers don't need to care about that, because we take care if there's something we are eventually using in beta and this changes, we adapt it internally.
And probably to add to that, Michael, it's really so because we have a couple of products who rely on Graph technologies, our team is constantly looking at what is new in Graph. What comes, what can we change, and so on. So it's not a one-point development, it's a constant development. We are constantly looking what's new and so on. And also from a supportability thing, we like the beta Graph, but to stay in a supported mode, we always try to use the standard Graph functionality.
I think you hit on something that a lot of enterprises don't understand, like, hey, we could build something, we could create our own provisioning process, and it works today, and then they just kind of set it and forget it, and then all of a sudden there's a change, and they don't realize that they're going to have to keep maintaining this code, especially in a cloud world. So, it definitely makes sense for a SaaS service.
Yeah, it's more, and also the fun part is we have currently with some of our clients, we have a Martina as a service. Because our clients say, we don't know what's new. Can you please, because you know, can you please prepare an overview about that?
By the way, just to mention that, because evergreening is a big topic for, I think, every Microsoft 365 customer. We have a free-to-use Teams application that's called Cloud Hub. You can find it in the Microsoft Teams store. This is currently a demo tenant here, but you get the idea that we get information from the message center, from the incident center, the Azure status, the Azure history, and so on. So we have a bunch of, let's say, tools here that provide us with updates here for the Microsoft Cloud services.
So, and I'm curious now, what do you think after that demonstration about the toolkit?
Well, in the last 2 seconds, I installed the Cloud Hub, so I think it's a pretty good suite of products, and yeah, definitely people should check it out.
Yeah, I agree. It's very well rounded, is what I'm seeing as well.
Great that you like it so far. So again, this was more or less created out of the idea to have a tool. And this is why we call it toolkit, because you can extend it and use it as you want it in your organization. So we provide it with the data and we provide it with ready-to-use workflows, and you can use these workflows and adapt them or create your own ones. And we try to add more and more data. For example, what's currently in here one thing that was missing was, for example, SharePoint sites, because for auditing perspective, we have customers who said, I'm not interested only in auditing of Teams, I'm also interested in auditing the SharePoint sites. And the owners must be responsible for the guests that are in that SharePoint site or Teams site, and I want to contact them, and they need to confirm that they check the permissions on their of their team or their SharePoint site, for example. And I want to do this on a half-year basis or yearly basis or something like this. So these are typically use cases that come to us, and we say, yeah, we try to integrate it into the governance toolkit so that all the customers who are using the governance toolkit can benefit from that. You can try it out anytime here at the trial. You also find FAQs here, etc. So if you're interested in the governance toolkit, simply go to the website governancetoolkit365.com, start a trial. You get an email there then, and you can use any Microsoft 365 tenant. That's simply a Microsoft form that is behind that website here, and we just ask for the domain. This must be a valid Microsoft 365 tenant, whatever it is. Because in the provision process, we check, is this a real tenant? And if it's not a real tenant, we say, please enter a valid Microsoft 365 tenant. And then you get an email where you need to confirm the application and say, I allow the governance toolkit to access that Microsoft 365 data. And of course, we follow the principle of least privilege for the application, so that there are only read permissions required here. I think we have it here in the GitHub directory. So if I go back here, we describe this here on GitHub here, and you can see we have extended it a little bit. We need to update it, but it's we have removed, for example, the invite guests and the read and write all groups, because we are now using an own application if you want to use that functionality.
Perfect. Yeah, and I'll include the links in the YouTube video and on the O365A website for that as well. But with that, I want to thank you, Tony and Martina, for coming on. It was really great catching up before the call and learning a little bit more about the products and solutions that you provide for M365 customers out there. And hopefully everybody listening in enjoyed it as well. And take advantage of the free trial that they have available. And we'll catch you on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.